From WSLR, LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota, and WBPV, LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Thursday, February 13th. While the Tennessee legislature is considering a bill allowing school districts to refuse enrollment of students without legal permanent status, Sarasota State Senator Joe Gruters said such a measure is a non-starter in Florida. He told reporters yesterday that, quote, it's not going to happen here. Gruters is a sponsor of legislation intended to help President Trump fulfill his promise of mass deportations. In the ongoing special session, he's also expected to vote today for the repeal of a waiver granting in-state tuition to students without permanent legal status. Among other immigrant crackdown measures, undocumented immigrants entering Florida would commit a misdemeanor that carries a minimum 9-month jail sentence under a bill that advanced yesterday in key House and Senate committees. Governor Ron DeSantis named yet another former politician to a job overseeing higher education. Former House Speaker Paul Renner, who term-limited out of the House in November, will oversee the Florida Board of Governors, which supervises the state's public university system. Other former lawmakers on the board are Manny Diaz and Jose Oliva. Other Republican politicians landing jobs in public higher education are former Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunez, who now heads Florida International University, former House Majority Leader Adam Hasner, who is now president of Florida Atlantic University, and, of course, former House Speaker Richard Corcoran, who now heads New College of Florida. Florida car dealers are trying to keep a chokehold on new car sales by suing in state court. Some of the state's biggest dealers are plaintiffs in a suit trying to shut down online pre-sales by a Volkswagen spin-off. Scout Motors is developing a new line of electric SUVs and pickups, trying to sell them directly to consumers. Dealer lobbyists are also pressing the state legislature to pass a bill in the upcoming legislative session that would make it easier to crush potential competition. The Florida Automobile Dealers Association called on members to give money to Florida lawmakers during the 2024 election. This has been Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Thursday, February 13th.
Welcome to The Detail. I am your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. With me today is Tom Matrullo, my brother in arms, many times, so to speak.
Kathy.
Right. How are you?
Good.
We're going to be talking about the County Commission hearing yesterday to look at the D.R. Horton proposal to build 125 homes next to the celery fields. It had been 170. They walked it back to 125, but still they did not get the green light from the County Commission in what I would think many might say is a surprising show of unanimity. It was a 5-0 vote against the proposal. And Tom, I've used your photograph many times, but after Tropical Storm Debbie, you took a photo outside your car window of that very site, and it was completely underwater. But hey, thank you for being here, for number one.
Happy to be here, Kathy.
Yeah, tell us about that day
that photo was a no-brainer, but I had to try three different ways to get to that location because the roads were flooded everywhere. Mm. I tried going up Lorain and through Palmer and Wetherington, that development that's got this wall around it and big wetlands, well, it was flooded right in front of the entrance. Cars were stuck in the water.
Wow.
So I turned around and went another way. Mm-hmm. I was blocked that way, too. So finally I got to there through a third method, and Sure. I just stopped. I mean, that field is actually probably about 3 feet lower than the road, but the water was up above the road and filled the field. Mm-hmm. So only the very southern end. This is something that Steve Swah, the water engineer, the hydrologist.
We had on. Shout out to Steve.
Yes.
On the show.
He had studied that field and noticed that only the southern end of it is really high enough to be built on. And if D.R. Horton had even paid attention to the way the field is laid out, mm-hmm. they would have probably had a better chance of getting something approved. But it was a senseless proposal.
Well, it was, but we've seen senseless proposals get approved before. And so, you know, just to back up a little bit, we're talking about a piece of farmland right now at the corner of Raymond Road and Palmer Boulevard. And if you're not familiar with the celery fields, it is a frankly restored wetland. It was a wetland to begin with. It got filled in to grow celery. It was famously grew amazing, bountiful, you know, crops of celery. And then in 1992, there was a storm called the No Name Storm. And I think at that time the farm was dormant. They weren't farming anymore. The No Name Storm, it kind of like Debbie. I mean, Debbie had a name, but it was a storm that nobody expected a whole lot from, and it flooded the Philippi Creek Basin massively. Over 200 homes were flooded along Philippi Creek, and it was evident because Bobby Jones Golf Course, that area used to be called Little Sawgrass. It was a wetland, and then the celery fields was called Big Sawgrass. And if you go by, I think on Cattleman, you'll see a little street named Sawgrass, kind of a throwback or an homage to what those areas used to be called. So Steve Swah was with the county. He's a hydrologist. He designed the celery fields, this restoration of a huge wetland. Now we have an Audubon Center there because there are so many birds. It's internationally known. And this is where they wanted to put a whole lot of, you know, on a lot that flooded, was under 3 feet of water, they wanted to put 100, it was originally 170 homes.
Yes.
So I loved the Planning Commission meeting where there was a planning commissioner, I do not know his name, where he said, I don't think anything should be built there. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a change. Had it not been for that tropical storm Debbie, though, honestly, Tom, do you think they probably would have? I think it probably would have gotten approved. There's nothing like photographs and an actual recent experience to change people's minds. But yeah, they denied it. So that and that was good news.
But you know, the actual Planning Council, Planning Commission meeting was divided. It was 4-3. So three of the planning commissioners thought this was fine, no problem. One of those happened to be the son of Al Mayo, Alan Mayo. And his explanation for his vote was, I'm for property rights. Is that exactly the reasoning we want? I mean, you know, you can be for property rights and still see a problem with putting 126 buildings in a area that is known for its dark skies, its tranquility, its birding, its wildlife, its tourism. There are so many reasons, and all this came out in the hearing. It was wonderful to hear 61 people led off by, not the first, but almost the first speaker was Andromeda Ray, who was 9 years old.
Aww.
And you could barely see her head above the podium.
And she needed a podium. She needed a stand,
She deserved a stand, yes.
Yeah.
And she ended her little talk by saying, I think sometimes, when are they going to stop building?
Mm-hmm.
It was a nice lead off.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know.
And she's 9 years old?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And her mom was a big fan of the Sourifields as well. She's part of the astronomy club. She talked about all the things that go on out there, the school things and so
yeah.
on.
Yeah. So to get back, because now I want to talk about the group that, that you're part of, Sarasota County SCAN
yeah. Act,
and it's Action Network. Is that what
Sarasota.
It stands for?
Sarasota. Citizen Action Network.
Sarasota Citizen Action Network. But to get back to the younger Mr. Mayo, is it, what's his first name?
Alan.
Oh, it's also.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's Adam.
Adam, right. This idea of property rights. Well, I read about this a long time ago. It always stuck with me. But the built environment is never a free market. Because public investment is always involved. Infrastructure.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Sewers, roads, you know.
The stuff the taxpayers pay for. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Whether or not the cops are going to come if you have a problem, you know, where are you going to go to the ER? All these things are necessary if you're going to have residential development. So it's never just I get to build whatever I want. That's why we have zoning, because we are supposed to organize our investment for maximum efficiency. It's not supposed to be I have a field, I want to build a hospital there. You know, no. There yes. there's right. reasons, you know, the very first zoning I'm fond of saying is when they decided to not locate the outhouse near the fresh water source, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there are very practical reasons why, as a society, we have to organize our investments mm-hmm. and choose where we're going to put things. So to tee up homeowners for, it would just be a matter of time before the people, if those homes were to get built, that they would be dealing with flooding. And we're in a situation in the state of Florida where, you know, the insurer of last resort is a public entity, right? Citizens.
Yes, sure.
Why is that happening? Why do you have to have a public entity to insure? Because the insurance industry knows it's not a good bet. Mm-hmm. Why isn't it a good bet? Because we have irresponsible development decisions that are costing us, you know, lives and you know, personal wealth.
And I think,
yeah.
Kathy, I think to dig into what you just said, the irresponsibility, it's partly due to the fact that they're not, first of all, consulting their own rules, the comp plan, the
yeah.
EDC. People who spoke yesterday pointed out that many things in the Horton proposal were strict violations of our own plans, our own rules.
Which, you know, we've seen the county commission blatantly violate before, and unless somebody sues, which most people don't have the time or money to do, mm-hmm. and now the law in Florida is rigged against the citizen, mm-hmm. if they sue, even if it's a good lawsuit, right, well-intentioned and fair, if you lose, you have to pay the fees of the developer.
That's right.
So the game is so rigged against yes. the public right now. But yes, there was so much excellent public input.
And one of the things that I think, the theme that sort of recurred throughout the meeting was people saying that if Horton says this won't hurt, this won't impact the Sourifields, what if they're wrong?
Yeah,
it can't be undeveloped once it's developed. That was Jay Marhofer, who gave a fabulous talk.
Mm-hmm.
He analyzed the economics of the situation, and he showed concretely that the Sourifields actually generates far more revenue from tourism than any development produced by Horton would create in taxes.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But apart from that was the question, well, if you haven't looked into what the potential issues could be, then it is irresponsible of you to approve it.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was, well, I wasn't in the room. You know, I had a commitment of my own that I had to go to that day, so I watched it on television. I'm curious, because I've been in those rooms, right, when there's hundreds of people. What was it like in there? What was the vibe like? How were people? Because a lot of times the crowd peters out because they're in there in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But people have their lives, and they have to, they sign up to speak, and then they've got to get back to work, or they've got, like I did, they have a meeting. What was it like in there?
Well, the morning session, I would say just about every seat in the room was filled, and there were people in another room, an adjacent—
The overflow
room. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the county seemed to know to expect this to happen because they were all ready for it.
Right.
People had no hesitation about getting up and speaking. They were very forthright. They were very honest. Some of them were almost emotional.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people had done homework. You know, they brought in their work. And some of the comments were the sort of thing that you'd say, well, only a birder could know that. But other things were basically common sense. And the question is, where was the county's research? In other words, you've got a public amenity.
Mm-hmm.
Where was the group of people sent to study this to make sure that our amenity would not be harmed? It didn't exist.
It didn't, yeah.
And that's what I feel, well, the same thing happened with the Gabbert dump 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The county sort of discounts the salary fields because it wasn't really planned. It just happened.
You mean they did the stormwater. Environmental value as a birding site just happened.
The birds came. They made the decision to come there. We didn't plan that.
Well, and to come back,
yeah.
You know, to what had been a wetland. Mm-hmm. And, you know, frankly, due to the talent of Steve Swaugh and his design, it must be pretty good because the birds love it.
Well, Steve was really doing the stormwater thing. He was also working with John Thaxton and Teresa Connor, who was with the environmental. And
yeah.
I thought she was a brilliant woman. I had heard her speak. And I ran into her one time on the mound.
Mount Sarasota, Mount Celery Fields Hill,
Mount
the big
Celery.
Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was walking along, and I recognized her, so I went up to her. I said, you know, what is this mound made of? And she said, it's junk.
I heard it was trash. Like, there was stuff underneath that was just,
yeah.
Like, a lot of places have done that with their landfills,
sure.
Made them...
Well,
yeah.
And this was, the thing was that there was a lot of the muck came from digging out the wetlands,
okay.
Right?
Yeah, of
but,
course, that
But
makes
then
sense.
I think there's also, she said there was junk. It's just
yeah.
Garbage, you know? And yet when they covered it over with good soil and it started growing and then the trees, it's lovely.
Yeah.
But there was an industrial group of people, and I will just name two, James Gabbert.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Wachter, who were trying to protect the industrial zone that they had operations in that is near the highway off of Palmer Boulevard.
Right. So the Celery Fields is just off of I-75, if you're listening and you're not quite sure where it is. And you've got a road that is parallel to I-75, Cattleman, and there's a lot of industrial use there. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's some restaurants, there's gas stations, but it's like an industrial zone where you've got, I don't know, paver companies and this waste transfer facility that
a lot of businesses, a lot of
that
industrial
Gabbert
businesses.
Wanted to build really much closer to the Celery Fields than he wound up building. But yeah, those are two very familiar names.
Well, they were powerful. They
yeah.
You know, Gabbert bought two seats on the board, Mayo and Moran. And you know, he
You
he
mean,
launched,
he, so what you're talking about is he basically donated heavily.
Yeah, Moran's coming out party as a candidate was funded at the Field Club by Jim Gabbert.
Okay.
So there's a lot of power behind these guys, and they have, you know, a whole kind of workforce of people who support whatever they tell them to support.
You know where that was... so evident was at the, is it 3H Ranch, Pat Neal's proposal in August. And there was just an array of, hey, these are good people doing,
yes.
You know, what, floor coverings and landscaping and, I don't know, all kinds of things.
All of his subcontractors showed up in Pat Neal shirts.
Were they Pat Neal shirts? And they were all talking about how, it was 6,000 homes, did get approved, out off of Clark Road, I believe, near, and the people next door were like, you got to be kidding me. Mm-hmm. So this was unusual in that it got denied unanimously. I'm curious about your thoughts on that unanimous vote. What do you think? Because I think we could count on Tom Knight to say no. He's shown that he's very concerned that Sarasota County doesn't have the infrastructure we need to prevent flooding, and we've got to take care of that. Mark Smith also. But you had Joe Nunder and Ron Kutzinger and Teresa Mast vote no.
And this did, present for us a question. You know, going into the meeting, we did not have any idea how they would vote.
Mm-hmm.
We suspected maybe we'd get one of the three, and then we'd have a 3-2 vote against mm-hmm. Horton. But the Teresa Mast led off the discussion with a kind of, frankly, a word salad. I didn't know what she was talking about. But she said, she made it clear she's for property rights. But then went on, after noodling around for a while, to say, I can't support this.
I'm going to stop you. Do you know that it's a violation of Robert's Rules of Order to talk about how you're going to vote before the vote? It's considered undue influence. And I owe that knowledge to, and you're looking perplexed because they do it all the time. They do it all the time at the county and the city.
They do.
All the time. You are not supposed to talk. You're supposed to speak to the motion or to the issue, but you are not supposed to say how you're going to vote. Why? Because you're supposed to be hashing it out.
Well, and allowing all five of them talked about how they were going to vote.
Really?
It wasn't just Teresa. It was all five of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, this was a very short discussion. They did not get into the questions of the comp plan violations. They did not get into all the details that many of the people brought to the discussion.
I don't know that
it was very superficial.
They didn't want to create a record.
Well, that's an important thing because it's possible that some other thing could come back.
Sure.
And if they had said, we are not approving this because A, B, C in the comp plan, then that would kind of have to be in effect the next time something came up.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So to me, here's my reading of the tea leaves. You had two definite no votes. You've got one commissioner who's going to be running again, Commissioner Nunder. Mr. Kutzinger seems to me to be a pretty reliable vote for developers. And Ms. Mast has an incredible, resume of lobbying for development. So I think that the merits were truly not there. The fact that if Debbie hadn't happened, I honestly think it would have passed. It would have been a 3-2 vote. But because Debbie happened and because there was such a clear problem, it's one thing to think about what could happen. It's another to talk about what happened last August, 6 months ago. And once you're over that hump, once it's a 3-2, which I do think Joe Nunder, is a persuadable person, there's really no benefit for the other two to vote yes, because then they're seen as voting for something crazy. And so they vote no.
I think that's fair, Kathy, but I think it may also have been that they would have gone this way anyway because of the enormous public outcry and, presence in the room.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 8 years ago when people showed up to protest the Gabbert dump. They weren't leaving until they were satisfied that this was not going to happen. So you had that sense in the room. Now, these commissioners are new, right? Teresa Mast, Tom Knight are new. The other three are still newer than, the old guard of Mayo and Moran. What I think they understood, and in fact, I said this in my talk, I said, this is a defining moment. You guys are new. If you vote Horton, you know, you are tagged for life. You will never be forgiven by the people of Sarasota. Mm-hmm. And I think they understood that.
Yeah, you're right. That's true. I think that's true. We would be remiss if we didn't talk about a certain news article that came out the day before.
What could you be talking about?
Yeah,
that?
I'm talking about the Florida Trident. We're calling, you and I were joking, maybe I need to write something called Hold the Al Mayo. This article, Michael Barfield wrote it, and, you know, I'm familiar with the huge research he takes on in the past. He went through county emails and was able to piece together a timeline of meetings where a road that was meant to run through High Hat Ranch, which under any normal circumstance would have to be paid for by the developer. So what is High Hat Ranch? High Hat Ranch was literally a cattle ranch.
It's the largest development in Sarasota County.
Well, approved, right? Yeah. It's not been built yet. And Jim Turner, the owner of High Hat Ranch and his family, but Mr. Turner Jim was out in front in 2014 and 2013 advocating for changes to the 2050 plan. And let's be clear, he could have built on his land with the 2050 plan. It just would have required a kind of building that would preserve a whole lot of habitat and a whole lot of floodplain. But these guys build the way they build. They build sprawl. They want to build sprawl. And so that's what they were advocating for. We want to have our normal way of building. And they won, you know. And those rooms were packed, you know, Tom. There were plenty of people there saying, what are you doing? But they went ahead and did it. And so the Florida Trident uncovered how Al Mayo, and he had recently been a county commissioner. I mean, there's no ICCMA, it's the City County Managers Association. It's an ethics organization, best practice. Their recommendation is you've got to wait 2 years if you leave government to then lobby. Well, I don't believe there was any waiting, right? And you've got Al Mayo meeting with county staff advocating for the cost of this road to be picked up by taxpayers. It was a pretty explosive article.
It was dynamite. And I'm not sure, and I will admit I haven't fact-checked it thoroughly. I do know that there is apparently one mistake in there. I've been told, having to do with the cost of the road. But in other respects, it seems like it was, at least so far, a legitimate analysis of the emails that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. There were apparently something like 160 emails involving Mayo talking with the Hi-Hat people and involving Matt Osterhout, the head of planning, and Spencer Anderson, the head of public works. Now, the article, the nub of the article is that Anderson and Osterhout originally sided with planners in the county who were saying, there's no way you can do it like this. Mm-hmm. There's no way that you're going to take this road that's only serving one development and have the people pay for that. That's a developer cost.
It's internal to the development, right?
Well, it's Bee Ridge Road, so it's a public road.
Okay.
But when you go past Lorraine, it's not there yet. There's a dog shelter and there's Rothenback Park.
They're and the place where I bring my, you know, hazardous waste, like if you have an old computer, you go out the end of Bee Ridge and drop it off there.
Yes.
So that's where we're talking about. And it would go through Rothenback Park.
It would go along. It doesn't have to go into, but there's space right next to it.
So the article was saying we were going to lose parkland. We were going to be paying for something we shouldn't have to pay for. Mm-hmm. And all of this was being done by a former county commissioner, was kind of the point man.
Working for Kim Lee Horn, because he is back to his old stomping grounds. He was at Kim Lee Horn before commissioner, and now he's back.
Yeah. So, and you know, that's, I mean, hey, Kim Lee Horn, they do good work in many,
yes,
in many ways.
Sure.
And but this was, you know, if you're gonna, these folks are gonna make a ton of money building these houses, but their game is, and I'm speaking generally now, the game I've seen over the years is we're going to try to offload as much cost onto the taxpayer as possible. And it, at some point, you know, I look at county staff because, you know, you and I are both administer Citizens for Sarasota County on Facebook. And one of our members there was chiming in on this and saying, you know, at what point do these people lose their jobs talking about county staff for folding, right? And honestly, I lay this at the feet of the county commission and the culture that they create within the county. This is about the money behind elections. The county staff, if they, I don't think they feel free. They certainly held the line for a long time and said, no, 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 and then they flipped. And the ongoing long game effort that these folks go to get what they want is effective. It's effective. And unless you have a county commission that holds the line as, and a press, frankly, that uncovers these things. So shout out to the Florida Trident and the work of Michael Barfield on,
yes,
this.
Absolutely.
Because it was a game changer.
Yeah.
This was approved last week. We were on deck,
yes,
to pay for this.
Well, that was the stunning thing, that the board did approve it, not realizing that these changes had been built into it. The whole matter that apparently was presented to the board was different from what the board thought they were approving.
And so, you know, I've seen information, key information, held back from a commission by staff. The biggest recent thing I've seen and been aware of, this is only what I'm aware of, right? We don't know what we don't know. But there was an engineering report from Cairns, the Cairns engineering report, back, I think it was in 2021, 22, when the city commission was evaluating a contract with the Van Wezel and whether or not to build a new facility. The former city manager had gotten this report about the state of the Van Wezel and whether or not it could be rehabbed or, you know, and the whole game of certain folks was to paint the Van Wezel as some dying, horrible, useless thing that had to be bulldozed. It was really disrespectful strategy, but that was, in my view, their game. The city commission didn't get this report, and it was there. The city had it. The city manager had it in his possession. It was not part of the backup material. The public paid for this. We paid for this report, and it was withheld. Okay, so city staff, and actually this was, and I lay this at the city manager's feet, but they have a lot of power because they winnow the information that gets put in the packet, that gets put in front of the county commission or the city commission. And when there's backdoor dealing going on with a former county, and, you know, I just look at it. There's many ways you can be subtle, but let people know that this is how it has to be, okay? This is how it has to be. And these people have families to raise, you know? Are they going to fall on their sword? It's up to the public and the county and the press, the county commission. So this was, I think, a game changer because that article came out. It wasn't about the D.R. Horton proposal, but it...
It was about planning.
And corruption.
Yes.
And it showed how corrupt the county can be when it comes to planning. It was pretty amazing.
I was just thinking to say something about how this played out, but now it's escaped me. So.
Oh, it'll come back.
it'll come back.
There's so many things, Tom. There's always so many things to talk about. One of the public comments that struck me was there was so much great, competent, and substantial public input, which is the standard, right? To if something's going to be legally challenged, you need to get on the record competent, substantial input, which speaks to the policy and the proposal and why the proposal is inconsistent with right. with the law, really, with yes. with public policy. And there was a gentleman there who said, you know, I have a friend who came to town. He's a professional, I believe he's a professional planner, but somebody who was very well versed in, you know, how communities work. And he said, you know, we took him to the celery fields, we took him fishing, we went to restaurants and all of this. He had a terrific time. And I asked him, though, at the end of the visit, what do you think? Would you move here? And he says, you know, there's so many great things here I really loved. And he mentioned all those things. He said, but no, I don't think I would. Why not? He said, you know, the traffic here is really bad. And I was like, before the show, I told you it took us, my husband and I, 40 minutes yesterday at 3 o'clock. So we did hit the Cardinal Mooney light on Fruitville. So we had to slow down there, which everybody should when school lets out. But it took 40 minutes to get to Lakewood Ranch from downtown Sarasota. It doesn't usually take that long. But I get that. I mean,
yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, there's particularly this time of year. I mean, this is peak season now. And the highway is often at certain times just, you know, a parking lot. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be a rush hour effect. You know, the morning they're coming one direction, the afternoon they're going back.
Sure.
But it is really a cluster. You know, it's like...
Yeah, it's gotten so bad. And I'll tell you, so when we were on getting onto I-75 on Fruitville, and this was just before 3 o'clock, so we left at 2:30. So we're not in rush hour traffic. School traffic, but not rush hour. Mm-hmm. But we're getting on I-75, and my husband's like... looking at all the cars heading east on Fruitville, and you know, and he's like, oh my gosh. Yes. And I'm like, this is before Hi Hat Ranch has 13,000 homes approved.
Yes.
Isn't that right?
Yes.
This is before the 5,000 homes that just got approved, Lakewood Ranch South, mm-hmm. yes. out on Fruitville. Mm-hmm. It is stunning to contemplate, because these roads are already failing.
Yes.
What is it going to be like, you know, and...
Well, that's where the planning is supposed to take into account these wider impacts, the public, the impact upon public roads, the impact on our ability to go from point A to point B. And if the county doesn't do that homework, or if the planners don't do that homework, then we don't know. We just don't have that information. So a lot of times I feel like decisions about very important things, like, oh, the 3H Ranch, Pat Neal's yeah. ranch, which was, it's in a floodplain. There's a lot of floodplain in that one.
Mm-hmm.
Never discussed.
That's 6,000 homes.
Yeah. Yes, 6,700, yeah. I think, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's that's 2,700 acres off of Clark Road. So if we see the problems on Bee Ridge and the problems on Fruitville, don't forget about Clark, because you've got a series of developments coming along Clark. You've got Sky Ranch, mm-hmm. 3H Ranch, and then Hi Hat Ranch is coming down, because that connects Fruitville all the way down to Clark.
Isn't it interesting how they're all called ranch?
Yes.
Like, there's this effort, right? They're painting this picture of this rural, like, lifestyle, and meanwhile they're destroying it.
Exactly. Yes.
Like,
yes.
Well, so, and you know, I know someone who lives out in Sky Ranch, and I'm sure it's beautiful, and they're happy there, and all that.
They do like it there. I know who live out there.
I'm sure it's great.
Yeah.
You know, now, but. When all these things,
yes.
if they do get built, which, you know, if they're all built, to go back to the original intention of the 2050 plan, because it's kind of like what's going on with the Smith Farm, the parcel where they, D.R. Horton wanted to put 125 homes. You've got farmers or ranchers who are being offered tons of money for their property if it can be built for residential use. And there's a tool called transfer of development rights, where that farmer, and this first started in New Jersey. It's been around for a long time. But New Jersey was losing its farmland because farmers were being, and if you've ever had a New Jersey tomato, you know it's a crime for them not to grow tomatoes. Yes. They're so good. So the government stepped in and said, okay, Mr. Farmer, Mrs. Farmer, we're going to pay you for your development rights, and you're going to get your windfall because we understand it's like too much of a temptation. So you're going to get your money. But in exchange, you're going to keep it a farm, and you're going to work it, or someone else is going to work it. But we need local food. We need our farms preserved. But we're gonna compensate you for that opportunity cost. We understand someone's offering you so much money. And then we're going to take those development rights, and people can purchase them. And there are zones where we will allow some upzoning. Urban areas, right? Mm-hmm. And you can increase density there where we already have infrastructure, where we have excess capacity, infrastructure capacity, where it makes sense, and where you can have a walkable community,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where you can reduce traffic. So Sarasota County and the city talk a really good game about this stuff, but at the end of the day, they don't do it very well. And that was the intention of the 2050 plan, was to have these little villages with lots of open space where you had clustered development, where people could walk to get a sandwich or a carton of milk or, you know, get their groceries, go to the mailbox, all of that, not get in a car.
Yes.
and you would preserve a rural lifestyle. And they just bowed to the...
Well, the
sprawl development model.
The sprawl development model, and I think if you take a step back and you look at the, I was actually thinking about writing a people's alternate history of Sarasota County, starting from about 2012 or 11, because we had the Great Recession back in
2008.
Yes. And a lot of developers really lost their shirts. I remember reading how, you know, developers just went bankrupt left and right all over Florida. They were at risk with their investments, and boom, suddenly gone.
So it was a big housing bubble.
When that economy started to come back, you know, in dribs and drabs and then stronger, about 2011, 2012, first of all, Rick Scott got in office
in 2010.
And demolished the planning system, the regulatory system that had been in place in Florida for like 35 years.
Yeah, he did.
I used to go to the regional planning councils down in Fort Myers every month. I watched professional planners take a big development like with Pat Neal or the Hi Hat Ranch, and they would go through it with a fine-tooth comb, and they had the authority to say, no, you can't do this here. You have to move that there. There's so much... there's too much housing here. They would basically tame the developer's hubris, and then it would go up to the state. Scott got rid of all of that, and what do you think happened? The local governments suddenly were at
the Wild West.
They were at the mercy of money because the developers.
Well, can I back up? Because another thing happened in 2010: Citizens United.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's when we started getting dark money in our elections, in our local elections, which, you know, I write about. And he demolished DCA. It's funny. I've been going through my papers, like doing a massive deep clean, and I found this note, and it was from Rick Scott, and he sent me a note and he said, "Kathy, let me know how I can help Rick." Like,
let him know, Kath.
I know.
Get back to him on it.
Gee, why didn't I call Rick? Why didn't I just call Rick all this time? But, you know, to his credit, I think that's a lovely thing to do. Mm-hmm. But the reality of his administration, that kind of fine-tooth comb that you're talking about is what I was talking about with public investment is always involved with development. So the public has to have a seat at the table. That's why the public entities have zoning and create rules about where things can go, because it can't just be do whatever you want. People, kids need to go to school and get picked up by the bus, and there's just all these different reasons. We used to have that in Florida. I think it was under Lawton Chiles where you had mentioned the comp plan. It was the requirement for every county to have a comprehensive plan.
Oh, no, that was Bob Graham.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Bob Graham. And what did that, it's like the local Bible for land use. It's the local constitution for land use. How are we going to do things? And, you know, another thing we have to talk about is we're happy to see the celery fields being protected. But I had Mike Hutchinson and Eileen Fitzgerald on recently, and they lost their appeal, which they felt they had a very sound legal basis for appealing the 5,000 homes in Lakewood Ranch South. And, you know, the public focus on that decision was not the same, you know, and the committee, I think it was a 3-2 vote, you know, where they went ahead and approved the final piece. So it's not like we're out of the woods.
Oh, no.
It's not like this commission has found.
If this commission were serious, they would have cited, you know, specific relevant planning regulations that impacted their decision. But they didn't. It was just more like mush, you know? Mm. And we need more than that. And, Kathy, I just want to add one point to what we were saying a moment ago.
Sure.
That back in about 2005, and I tried to get this information from the elections people, supervisor, they couldn't even find how much a person running for county commission would receive in their, contributions. Mm-hmm. But it was probably about $10,000 to $15,000.
It absolutely was. Frank Kovach, so when I wrote my first article about this, The Prince of Dark Money, and it was for SRQ Daily, and I quoted Frank Kovach. He was on the school board, and he was choosing not to run again. And, you know, if things hadn't changed, he would have probably been a shoo-in to win re-election. But Frank Kovach said, and this was in 2015, and it was the Bridget Ziegler Ken Marsh race really changed the face of local elections, because it, you know, over $100,000 each of them had. But then Bridget Ziegler got money from this entity that was based, I ultimately found it in Wyoming, Phoenix Media LLC. She had a PAC putting out mailage for her, which brought her kind of actually surpassed Ken Marsh's funding. Without that PAC, it's very, in my opinion, very unlikely that she would have won. So that race was a game changer. So that was 2014. In 2015, Kovach says, used to cost only $10,000 to run for school board. Now it's a six-figure race. And he said, it's been corrupted by cash, and I don't want to do this. Well, my view was that he had been also kind of sat down and told, this is the new reality, dude. And Eric Robinson filed to run.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he had all this PAC money at his disposal. So, you know, Citizens United immediately had a big impact here in Sarasota and Manatee County. And the first place, actually, was Joe McClash's reelection, where there was a PAC attacking Joe McClash, a conservative Republican, but an environmentalist.
Yes.
And a very careful, just like you say, fine-tooth comb. He knew what was going on with planning. He held the line. And Betsy Banach challenged him. And I believe Betsy, she said, listen, I didn't know anything about the PAC. But she had been in Florida, a former employee of Benderson, I believe. She's a professional planner.
Mm-hmm.
And they attacked Joe McClash as a rhino. They said he was for Obamacare. They said he was pro-choice. He was none of those things. And he didn't have time to respond. So I have to say, though, look at what happened in Manatee County. this fall, Betsy Banac was one of the leaders of the charge of Take Back Manatee. And they came up with a logo, Take Manatee Back from Developer Control. They organized and removed commissioners, you know, that the public understood.
Yes.
And so someone like Kevin Van Ostenbridge, he did not win. He couldn't run in his district because the district, he knew he wasn't going to win that race. That's just my interpretation. So then he filed against George Cruz, an at-large commissioner. And it's interesting because Banac is being sued now by
what?
Kevin Van Ostenbridge.
Really?
Yeah, for defamation. Oh. Well, because she actually, you know, worked and organized, and they don't like that.
Right.
So it's something to watch, but I think things are moving in the right direction, but we're not quite there yet.
Well, you know, it's always a pendulum. I mean, when I first got to Florida back in the early, well, I came in the end of 89, so there was talk of, you know, moratorium back then, and people were serious about it. They were, back then, we're talking more than 35 years ago, they were saying there's too much construction going on.
Yeah.
They had no idea what was coming down.
No.
So the moratorium thing started back then, and then it kind of died away. But the developers are absolutely paranoid of that word. So,
oh, moratorium.
Moratorium, yeah.
So, well, and they kept saying some of the public input yesterday, Zephyr Hills has a moratorium. Zephyr Hills has a moratorium. They're in their second year, I think. Said. It wouldn't be a bad, you know, getting back to this transfer of development right idea, urban development, and that's just Main Street USA. We don't have to be talking big cities, but Main Street USA, where you have retail on the bottom and offices and then, you know, units overhead, apartments overhead. That generates enough tax revenue to pay for the services it requires. Rural development does too. It's the sprawl development that actually puts cities and counties underwater.
Yes.
You know, I always recommend Strong Towns. It's an amazing blog. Charles Marone is the founder. And one of the things he says is that municipalities in the United States, if you go to their capital improvement projects list, they'll say CIP. And you look at that list and how long it is, and you actually fund, you know, allocate the funds that are necessary, there's no way that everything on that list can get built. Why? Because the way we're building doesn't generate enough value, enough tax revenue to fund all of the infrastructure it requires. Downtown type development, Main Street development does, like, a Dearborn Street in Englewood, Village,
right.
Gulfgate. It doesn't have to be, you know, what people say, oh, you're putting people in sardine cans. Well, it doesn't have to be like that. It can be just a couple stories. Palm Avenue in Sarasota, where the Miramar, of course, that's going to be a high rise, generates enough. And so does rural development. We're not seeing those conversations and that thinking coming from public officials, and we need it.
Well, you know, they're not getting funded by people who, you know, talk about those things.
Mm-hmm.
The money is coming from the developers for those candidates who the developers want. So just to finish the comparison, you know, if you could get elected for $15,000 back in 2002 in Sarasota County, well, you can't get elected for that now. And in fact, the candidates that are getting elected, $250,000 of known money. And then, of course, you know better than most of us that the dark money is also there as well.
Yeah.
The pack money.
Well, the numbers I've heard is that for Tom Knight, his race, of course, the primary was brutal with Neil Rainford, right?
Yes.
Neil Rainford, I'm told, spent over $1 million. I mean, based on my research, but then there's the other folks out there saying, well, there's actually more to it. $1 million for a primary for county commission, which historically in Sarasota County, the Republican primary is the election for county commission because the Republican wins for more than 50 years now in the general. And then Tom Knight, all told, spent $600,000. Mm. This is a guy with name recognition, you know, who grew up here, who's well-liked. You know, yes. I'm sure he's got some people who have, you know, issues, but, mm-hmm. but you know, I think for most part, he's very well-liked. And the attacks on him were brutal.
Yes, they were.
And
yes.
you had the current sheriff, and this is something I was stunned, mm. that his protege, Kurt Hoffman, came out actively campaigning for Neil Rainford. And that's not something we've ever seen, a constitutional officer in Sarasota
right.
County taking a position on one of the commission races
yes.
and then actively campaigning. So Tom Knight had quite a lot of forces against him.
They pulled out all the stops against him. They absolutely did. And yet he still won. And Rainford, basically, as far as I could tell, was just an empty suit voting for every developer that came down the pike.
Well, I mean, you know, he was appointed by Rick Scott. I'm not Rick Scott. See, I've got Rick Scott on my brain.
DeSantis. Yes.
He was appointed by DeSantis when Nancy Dieter passed away, and Tom Knight applied for that, mm. and he was passed over.
Right.
And he said, well, I'm still going to run. So, he, you know, Rainford had a position with a prominent local appliance firm. He was an executive at a certain firm that's well known. And so, you know, I knew we knew a lot of people, but yeah, he was a pretty reliable rubber stamp, and he had been on the Planning Commission too. I don't know that he ever voted no. He was not a name that would come up as a persuadable.
Yes, I agree.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, Tom, Sarasota Citizen Action Network, you guys did an amazing job along with Audubon organizing. Getting the word out. Where can people find out more about SCAN?
Well, we have a number of groups on Facebook. There's one that's called Scanning Sarasota Planning.
Yeah.
And if you look us up on Facebook, but we also have a blog called Scan Sarasota. Let me make sure I've got this right.
And while you're doing that, everybody, you're listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota and Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2024-25 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. And Tom, where can people find out about SCAN?
Okay, I recommend checking out our blog. It's called scansarasota.blogspot.com. The lead story right now is about the backroom deals at the Hi Hat Ranch. And we basically just, what's happening, and I think this is a very good thing, SCAN went out and talked to people around the county. We set up meetings in libraries. We went mm-hmm. down to you know, Venice. We talked with Northport people. The only people we haven't heard from are the Englewood people. They're so far out that it's hard
it's
to even get them.
Their own little world.
Yeah. But what's happened is that people from those areas are sending us their thoughts, their articles, and we're putting these on the blog or on Facebook as well. So there's actually a community of intention here to try to address the planning methodologies and why they have gone astray.
Yeah. So everybody, thank you so much for joining us. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Thank you, Tom Matrullo, for all the great work you're doing.
This was fun.
Yeah, and for coming on. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.
A bag of groceries accidentally taken off the shelf before the expiration date. I came back as a bag of groceries accidentally taken off the shelf before the day stamped on my sand. Did a large procession wave their torches as my head fell in the basket? And was everybody dancing on the casket? start procrastinate again. I'll never see myself in the mirror with my eyes closed. I didn't apologize for when I was 8 and I made my younger brother have to be my personal slave.
Of Democracy Now!, you're listening to WSLR-LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV-LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I think we're on the way to getting peace. I think President Putin wants peace, and President Zelensky wants peace, and I want peace. I just want to see people stop getting killed.
As President Trump speaks with Russian President Putin and Ukrainian President Zelensky in separate phone calls, this is the beginning of the end of the war on Ukraine. We'll speak with the nation's Katrina Vandenhoevel. Then Elon Musk's business empire scores benefits under Trump's shakeup with little to no oversight or transparency.
So all of our actions are maximally transparent. In fact, I don't think there's been, I don't know of a case where an organization has been more transparent than the DOGE organization.
We'll speak with three-time Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times reporter Eric Lipton about the billions Musk has to gain as he fires thousands and slashes the federal budget. We'll also speak with Lipton about how early crypto traders had speedy profit on Trump coin as others suffered losses, and his story on what to know about the Trump family's deals in the Middle East. Finally, as Indian Prime Minister Modi meets with President Trump at the White House today, we'll speak with the acclaimed Indian writer Pankaj Mishra about India, Israel, and Palestine.